High on a mountainside near the asylum in the ghost town of Jerome, Arizona, you are listening to Jerry and Kathy Wills. Hello, Eben. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jerry. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you for being a part of this show, for coming on and spending a little bit of time with us. A lot of folks have contacted me saying that it would be really interesting to have you on. And while I'm not completely fluid with everything about your experiences, I do know enough to understand that you had a near-death experience. And when I found out about that, I contacted you. I've had one as well. It was quite profound. And after looking into yours, well, yours was well beyond mine. Not that there's bigger, better, you know, a goal system here, but mine was really quite simple compared to yours. So I think, you know, with that in mind, maybe starting out for the people who might not know what your story is, because there might be people in our audience who don't. So just perhaps a brief rundown of what happened and what got you to that point where you are right now, basically.
Okay. I think it's important to point out I'd spent the 54 years of my life before my near-death experience as, you know, a scientist. I fully bought into conventional scientific materialism. I was teaching neurosurgery at Harvard Medical School for 15 years. You know, thought I had a pretty good idea about brain, mind, consciousness and all that and how it all worked. But I confess, I was a materialist or a physicalist, as it's known in science. Thought that the brain creates consciousness. And that's where my NDE was such a valuable gift, because it showed me that it's wrong. That is not true. And so what happened in my NDE was I developed a very rapid onset case of what's called gram-negative bacterial meningoencephalitis. So that's really about the worst form of meningitis you can have. That's a brain infection that can be very devastating, usually fatal, especially when it's as severe as mine was. And I was driven into coma within about three and a half hours of symptom onset, you know, severe back pain, severe headache. Next thing happening is seizures, and I'm gone from this world for the next 7 days. And I was taken to the hospital. All this is fully explained in the book Proof of Heaven. But the interesting thing, not only that I point out in book Proof of Heaven from the neurological details of my illness, but also a medical case report that was written by three doctors not involved in my care, but fascinated by my recovery. And that medical case report went well beyond the case I made in Proof of Heaven to make two major points. One is that the documented evidence of damage to my brain from neurologic exams, scans, lab values, et cetera, was so extreme that, you know, that case report basically is of someone who is going to die over 7 days of a severe brain infection. And the fact that I had any experience at all is a deep mystery, because the evidence is right there that all the parts of the brain that neuroscience would say are responsible for all the details of conscious awareness, you know, the occipital lobes for the visual information in the back of the head, the auditory cortex in the temporal lobes, executive function in the frontal lobes, all of the things that are normally associated with consciousness and movement and activity, conscious awareness in particular, those sites are wiped out by meningoencephalitis. In fact, my brainstem was damaged from the get-go. So this case report amplified on my case that I shouldn't have had any dream or hallucination or confabulation or any kind of phenomenal mental experience given the damage to my brain. And that's a very important point. But the other point is also extremely crucial. And this is for those, especially those skeptics who say, well, this is all hallucination, imagination, is the fact that I should not have survived. My doctors estimated I had a 10% chance of survival early in the week, 2% late in the week, with no chance of recovery. And that's really the deep mystery, is how was I able to come back from that illness, having had this profound spiritual experience? And in fact, when the when that case report was submitted to the medical peer reviewers of the Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases in 2018, they said, this case is absurd. It doesn't make any sense. Nobody gets this sick from meningitis and then has a full recovery. So how do you explain it? And the doctors who wrote it said it's because he had a near-death experience that he had this healing. And the peer reviewers, the scientific peer reviewers said, okay, that explains it. We'll go with it. And it's because they knew of other cases, similar cases. And that's why I think my story is so important. It's not the phenomenal details of what I experienced, which are similar to many other NDEs, except for one exceptional fact was that I was amnesic. I did not remember anything of Evan Alexander's life. I had no words or language. And that amnesia was very important, but it took me months and months after the coma to figure out why the amnesia was so crucial. But that was a huge part of it. It also taught me a tremendous amount of things about consciousness, conscious awareness, and even memory. And in fact, in our third book, Living in a Mindful Universe, that I co-wrote with my life partner, Karen Newell, we go into great detail about how memory is not even stored in the brain. And my case was a beautiful example of that, because my memories were wrecked and gone and thrown away during this experience. And yet, as I recovered, all of my memories came back. In fact, more complete than they had been before my coma. So that's kind of the general picture of why my story is so important to the medical community and the scientific community. They take it very seriously because I shouldn't be sitting here. You know, 68-year-old guy, I shouldn't be here in this kind of shape after having gone through what I went through in that week of coma. And yet, miraculous healing is part of near-death experience literature. You know, you find other cases that are very well known of people who healed from things that they shouldn't have been able to heal from. And that, of course, is really the most important lesson that comes from NDEs, is because they have to do with our kind of essence as spiritual beings. And in coming into that wholeness in these lives, we need to rise above that petty little ego mind. And in many ways, the petty little ego mind of a reductive materialist neuroscientist needed some changing. And so that's what I've been through, is an extraordinary kind of gift of experience that proved to me consciousness is not created by the brain, but is filtered in. And that, in fact, we all share consciousness. We're sharing one mind, in essence. That's where the scientific community is headed on this. And that binding force that binds all these minds together is one of love and kindness and compassion. It's what, you know, the lesson that religions have tried to teach us, more or less, for the last few thousand years. And yet, I think with religions, often ideologies and people get into arguments about controlling other people, and you kind of miss the simplicity of the original message of the prophets that gave rise to religions. But that message comes through crystal clear in near-death experiences in the modern era. And that is that we just need to treat each other, you know, like we love each other. Unconditional love, kindness, compassion. It couldn't be clearer, but the NDE community makes that message crystal clear. And there are many details that we could discuss in my NDE, what I went through. But that's the essential framing of it. And the big reality is that the scientific community is well on board with this. You know, people today often think, well, you're either scientific or you're spiritual, and I'm a scientist. Well, guess what? If you're really a scientist, you're absolutely spiritual too. And that's because we're spiritual beings living in a spiritual universe. And that is the deep and profound scientific truth that is emerging from the modern study of near-death experiences and all kinds of similar phenomena of consciousness beyond the confines of the brain and body.
I want to go back for a moment to where you were talking about the damage that was done to your brain by this, because, I don't know what you, obviously as a scholar, would know. Do these parts of the brain ever repair? I mean, when it's damaged, I thought it was damaged. It's just, that's it.
Well, the brain in adults does have some capacity for repair. In fact, it's when I trained back in the 70s and 80s, we were taught that the adult brain had almost no plasticity or almost no reserve for recovery. But in the decades since then, we've discovered that, in fact, adult brains can do quite an amazing job of recovering from certain things. But what my journey does is it actually takes you much further than that, because there's very strong proof in my case, and in many other cases, when you look at it through the proper lens, that the brain is not the producer of consciousness at all. In fact, we are conscious in spite of our brain. That's the interesting thing. But it's better to look at the brain as a filter that converts all of this tremendous information that we have access to into a little trickle of information that's important for the survival of a biological system. And that's it. And of course, we assume that our senses give us a picture of some reality out there. But ultimately, what quantum physics and a lot of other aspects of science teach us is we're only getting a very kind of selective, isolated piece of it. But the other side of it is, if you think that your existence is nothing more than birth to death in this material body, when you study consciousness in big fashion, all the relevant pieces, you start finding that's not true at all. I mean, just looking at near-death experiences and the life review, which has been described in anywhere from 25 to 50% of NDEs over the last many decades. And the life review really shows us two things. For one thing, you've got to recognize a life review is a reliving of events, not just a remembering of events. It's very detailed. It offers opportunities for learning and kind of transition and shifting the narrative. But the life review is also not from one's own perspective, but really from the emotional perspective of those others around them who are affected by their actions and even their thoughts. So in a life review, you feel the impact of what you said and did to others. So if you handed out a lot of pain and suffering in the life review, that comes back to you. And in fact, I would say our very notions of hell might very well be from people who had life reviews where they've been handing out so much pain and suffering to others. When they had to receive it, you know, it was a hellish experience. But the interesting thing about life reviews is not only that, they show us we're sharing the dream of the one mind and that we're basically able to relive those events, not just remember them. And that's very important because it's showing us that that realm of the life review and that spiritual realm is outside of space and time. And that's very important. That's why you can experience, you know, your whole life like that, you know, flashes before your eyes. And yet it seems to be complete. People always come away from these experiences feeling it was a very complete journey through their lifetime as an opportunity of teaching and learning for lessons that we should have learned with these events. But now with the life review, we're getting kind of this cliff notes summary of our life that helps us to do a course correction, because another important part of the scientific data in this revolution is that reincarnation is absolutely real. The data for that is stronger than just about for anything else. If you go to uvadops.org, University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies, and look at the scientific work they've been doing over the last 6+ decades, you'll find more than 2,700 cases of past life memories in children suggestive of reincarnation. And 1,700 of those cases are what they call solved. That is, that they actually were able to identify the person who lived before that this child is talking about now. And it could have been, you know, a year or two or three earlier. It could have been half a century earlier that the other person lived. But that data from University of Virginia is so strong. If you read it with an open mind, there's absolutely no question about the fact that the phenomenon of consciousness is something that allows us to have a thread of consciousness through several lifetimes. And that's exactly what the whole world of transpersonal psychology in the current era takes advantage of to help people heal from issues in this life. It's by acknowledging that past lives have contributed to the issues that we'll face in this life. And their resolution is something that is much more readily accomplished when we have the bigger understanding of how we got here and that these multiple lifetimes are absolutely real. And the scientific community is on a one-way pathway to admitting the reality of all this. It's just that many people haven't studied it yet. They don't know it, get it. They haven't familiarized themselves with the cases. But, you know, looking into the future, there's only one way forward, and that's following the data. And the data is very clear that our souls come back again and again in this process of refinement. And it's all part of the evolution of consciousness itself. That's kind of the bigger picture way to understand it all.
You know, when you were talking about the life review, it just was like mind-blowing. My experience, and I want to ask you if you'd had this as well, but in my experience, it's like I went from one, I don't know how to explain it. It's like I went, let's say they're bubbles just for some point of reference, but 28 years old, I had not been a bad person, but there were times where I was a selfish or self-centered person. And sometimes I did things that were very self-serving. You know, I was still developing as a person, you know? And when I had this experience, I got to go through every good and bad. And I experienced myself as if I were the other person. And when I, at the end result of all of this is I felt so sad and hopeless that I had really missed an opportunity to have a life that was better than what it had been. And I just was blind to the potentials that were really right there all the time. When I came back, I never forgot that. And it really changed me. You had this kind of experience as well?
Well, I actually, you know, as I mentioned before, one of the atypical features of my near-death experience was amnesia, that I had no memories of Eben Alexander's life. And so that pretty much precluded my ability to have an Eben Alexander life review. But what I did see was in my journey, and this is all fully described in my book, Proof of Heaven, but it all started in what I call the earthworm's eye view, a very primitive course, unresponsive realm, very murky and foreboding. But I was rescued from that by this slowly spinning white light. It came with a perfect musical melody, and that ushered me up into this ultra-real gateway valley. And the Gateway Valley had many earth-like features, but also deep, profound spiritual features. And in many ways, it was like Plato's world of ideals, but for the individual soul going through soul growth. So that is where we would have life reviews, would be in that Gateway Valley. But it was only a gateway to higher levels that I entered. And that was through a collapse of four-dimensional space-time, a collapse of a deeper ordering of causality, what I call deep time or metatime, and then ascending to another light portal that was provided by these angelic choirs and chants and anthems and hymns that they were emanating when I was in that Gateway Valley. But those angelic choirs provided yet another portal to a higher level, to the core. And the core was this oneness with the divine, this all of the dualities and paradoxes of our universe collapse into oneness, into kind of the answer in many ways, as experienced in that core. And becoming one with that infinite God force was part of the core experience. But another aspect of it, and this is getting right to your question, was the ways that I did see life reviews and reincarnation. And I saw it in two very specific visions. One of those visions is what I call the flying fish version. And again, this was a vision in that core realm, even beyond the Gateway Valley. And that vision of the flying fish saw us as, you know, individual beings in material bodies as fish down in the water. But then when we die and leave the body, we would come up out of the water in this flying fish mode and then be in the spiritual form. And in that form, we've reunited with higher soul. We're back with our soul groups. We go through life reviews. We teach and learn the lessons that can be learned. And then we repackage what we're going to do in our next incarnation as a soul group, and then make those plans for the hardships and difficulties we'll face, as well as the beauties and the gifts we'll face, and then we dive back in. So that flying fish version was a beautiful example to me of life reviews and of reincarnation. But the next one was even more detailed and profound. And that was, it turns out if you read Proof of Heaven, you'll find that I cycle through these levels multiple times. And it was on a different passage up from the Gateway Valley into the core when I experienced what I call the Indra's net version. And that was a vision of this fantastic higher dimensional kind of a web of interwoven threads. And each of these threads, I could see the basically a soul line going through multiple incarnations. So incarnation in a physical body, and then the time between in this replanning of events with soul groups, higher souls, and then diving back in. And remember that there's programmed forgetting. So that just as the Ian Stevenson and Jim Tucker, the scientists who've studied all those thousands of cases of past life memories in children, will tell you, the memories have to be harvested before age 5 or 6. Because after that, their natural processes that cover over these childhood memories. And that's one reason why most of us as adults do not have ready access to those memories. But what I saw in this Indra's net vision was this incredible sense of soul lines going, and it was a weave of the fabric that I witnessed in this network, and it all led towards this golden center of pure knowing and of oneness with the divine. And in many ways, I came to interpret that Indra's net vision as showing us, again, life reviews, reuniting with souls of departed loved ones in this world of love, between lives. And it was almost like breathing in and out, this business of incarnation and between lives, incarnation, between lives. But it's not like, say, a Buddhist interpretation of reincarnation, where the goal is to get off the bus, you know, right. Because in fact, this golden center that I witnessed showed the power of grace, the grace of that one mind, of that God mind that we're all such a part of, and that we're leading towards that. It's towards this infinite knowing, and it's kind of the God mind knowing itself, because it's not as if the God mind has all the answers, but the God mind enjoys this beautiful dance with sentient beings going through these incarnations, temporarily kind of dumbed down to that bigger picture so that they buy into this notion of one incarnation, birth to death. But again, that program forgetting is there so that we don't remember this bigger picture. And I guess that has something to do with how the drama unfolds and the kind of purity of the message that the one mind is getting with this process. But in many ways, I came to see it like Pierre Teilhard de Chardin's book in the mid-20th century, The Phenomenon of Man, mm-hmm. where he recognized that, yes, there's an evolution going on. You know, and at that time, Darwinian evolution was a big topic of scientific discussion. But he said, no, the evolution is actually much, much grander than that. It's the evolution of all consciousness and sentience throughout the universe. And that is what we are witnessing. And that's what I saw in this Indra's net vision. So it was a beautiful vision of humanity and sentience throughout the cosmos, because this is coming from many different civilizations at different orderings and different levels of development, but they're all contributing to kind of this dance and growth of the one mind through this process. And what we need to know as human beings is our main lesson now, and we can't know what the lesson is a million years in the future, but the lesson we can easily project now from human destiny and human history is that over the last 2,000 years, we have been challenged with learning the deep lessons of oneness and of the one mind, and that we're all in this together. And that's what this scientific revolution is all about. We're finally getting to that point. And, you know, when you look at the world today, it should be no surprise that, of course, a tremendous awakening is afoot. And that's because the status quo is about to lead us into a dark path of absolute destruction for, you know, all of the planet and humanity at large. I mean, the threat of nuclear war that's emerging now in the Ukraine, the climate crisis, which is definitely out of control. I mean, we've known that burning carbon fuels, you know, we've known for a century and a half that burning carbon fuels would someday heat up the planet a lot to a point where, you know, we might get a runaway greenhouse effect like Venus. We have to be very careful. And tragically, all these dire circumstances coming together now have to do with the false sense of separation of materialist thinking, you know, the idea that we're separate beings, separate entities, and that we're all in this for our own good is wrong. We're here for the higher good. And that's what NDEs teaches. That's what all of this science of consciousness, really, when you look at it in giant fashion, because it's much more than just near-death experiences. the reincarnation literature. There's a tremendous amount of non-local consciousness to be explained, things like telepathy, precognition, that we can know the future seconds in advance. And that's even when the future has not yet been determined. For example, with computer models where the random number generator will select a picture that will be either horrific, beautiful, or neutral. And somehow we know there's a cognitive, Daryl Bem did a huge set of experiments, very much replicated around the world, that show precognition is absolutely real. We know the future. And what that's calling into question is, do we know a future that's predetermined, or is there some higher aspect of us that's actually creating that future on the fly? And I would think the latter is actually more likely, the more you know about all this. It's a fantastic time to be alive, because I think that all of this challenge to humanity with climate change, nuclear war, violence, conflict, you know, the false sense of separation and materialism, the answer, the solution, the cure is right there in the modern science of consciousness. The answer is absolutely right at the core of what we're talking about here. And that is to recognize, no, we are sharing this one mind. We're all in this together. The deep lesson of NDEs that we need to treat each other with love and respect. And that begins with ourselves, because I came back from my NDE realizing we don't even, you know, it's not, do we love our neighbor or our enemy enough? We don't even love ourselves enough, because we don't acknowledge and remember and recognize that divine sense of the sacred being that we actually are. And that's what needs to be recovered. And this is not just some little egotistical, I'm important kind of thing. It's about the world being important. It's about the soul acknowledging that our highest good is to help others. And that's what I think is coming to the fore with this modern science of consciousness. It's in giant fashion. We go into this in great detail in our book, Living in a Mindful Universe, which I would say is much more of a proof of heaven than my book, Proof of Heaven. That was really kind of a question mark. That was, oh my God, these things happen. How do we explain it? Doesn't fit a materialist model, but what's the answer? And Living in a Mindful Universe, our third book, which came out in 2017, goes a long way towards explaining this unification of science and spirituality, how all of this, the lessons of NDEs, the lessons of reincarnation, memories, and children, points to us a much different reality for humanity that is much more optimistic and kind of open-ended and promising and prosperous for all of us. But it's one where we shift gears and get away from this false sense of separation inherent in materialism and start really looking at the deep lessons from NDEs and other aspects of this science of consciousness and start living out how to live our lives. Because ultimately, the most important thing about near-death experiences is not what happens when I die, but how do I live this life today with every breath I take, every choice I make, and how I treat myself and how I treat others, how I behave, what my goals are, my sense of meaning and purpose. Every bit of it depends on this bigger reality. And I can't imagine a worse fate than spending my life as a hardcore materialist. And then right when you get to the end and you start having your loved ones who have passed over visit you and you realize they're really there. They're still active and present as souls, and they never left just because the physical body died. And you realize I wasted my whole damned life following this bleak and paltry fiction of materialist science when quantum informed science of consciousness says the exact opposite, that we're all in this together. We're sharing the one mind. It's all about love, kindness, compassion, mercy, acceptance, when necessary, forgiveness, and never forget gratitude. But, you know, people can change this planet, and this the history of humanity will be radically different from acknowledging this awakening that is absolutely certain given the data, unless we kill ourselves off first through the materialist stupidity, this false sense of separation, this sense of, you know, take care of me, but not you. And all of that greedy, egotistical materialist garbage is what is killing this planet. It's toxic. And, you know, sadly, for so many of our youth who are paying for these big educations, you know, if you're in college and things like that, most of the colleges have not yet figured this out. You know, academic institutions are not there yet, even though the leading edges are crystal clear to people in the scientific world. And the one resource I would give your people that absolutely will get them on a quick starter path to the discovery of the reality of everything I'm saying is go to BigelowInstitute.org. Robert Bigelow is an aerospace engineer who ran a contest last year. The challenge was, what's the best scientific evidence for the continuity of consciousness beyond permanent bodily death? And he wondered about that because he'd lost his wife and his son had committed suicide. And he had a lot of money. He was in aerospace, so he put up a few million dollars in prize money. They're originally going to give out 3 prizes. They ended up giving out 29 prizes because the essays were of such high quality from all around the world. 204 essays submitted. Everybody who submitted an essay had to document that they'd been studying the afterlife question scientifically for at least 5 years. So you don't have a bunch of, you know, newbies who don't know what they're talking about. You have a lot of world experts who have studied the data and know exactly what they're talking about. And if you go to BigelowInstitute.org and start reading those essays with Jeffrey Mishlov's first place essay there, and then there are 28 great essays to follow. Don't give up. And you will never, if you read these essays, any of them, you will never doubt the reality of the afterlife again. It's a scientific fact. And to continue with this insane nonsense of some materialist scientists getting on and saying, no, that afterlife, NDEs, they're all just made up, it's hallucinations, it's nonsense, because we cannot explain it with our little materialist model. Well, guess what? You can explain it, but we're working on the deeper aspects of that. It has a lot to do with quantum physics and the primacy of consciousness itself.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a comment. Subscriptions and your comments cost nothing, but it really helps us out a lot. To hear the entire interview you were just listening to and many, many other amazing interviews within our archives, please visit jerrywillsshow.com and become a member. Your membership supports our ongoing broadcasts. That's jerrywillsshow.com. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this program.